Here's Higdon. It sits up nicely for Michael Higdon. And what a start for Motherwell. But here's Malt, and he goes for it first time. Magnificent Malt. Stephen Robinson celebrates. Motherwell, two up. And could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr. And Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid. He scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight I'm joined by John Mahan to look back on two disappointing defeats. We'll then try and put a positive spin in things and look ahead to Saturday's Lanarkshire derby at Hamilton. And we'll see what else takes our fancy over the next three quarters of an hour or so. John, welcome along.
Hey, thanks very much for having me.
Not familiar with Sean. He was featured in the quite brilliant Motherwell video showing off his tremendous collection of Motherwell shirts. Fairly new to the local area, you've opted to support Motherwell. You may be questioning your motive.
Two games in, yeah.
A difficult start to the season. What attracted you to Motherwell and the shirt collection? That's very interesting as well. Give us a wee bit of background on that.
Yeah, no worries. So I moved out to the Motherwell area about a year ago, and pretty much the day, actually. We just bought a house out here and kind of moved out to the area. The only thing I really knew about Motherwell was the football team. And I'm kind of very conscious of the fact that I'm kind of part of a generation of people that are moving out to this area, but are probably working elsewhere, doing their socializing elsewhere, you know, probably not giving back an awful lot to the local community. So I kind of feel a little bit like, you know, not pressure or anything, but just kind of wanting to kind of be involved in Motherwell as much as I can. And I think a natural thing for me to gravitate towards what was the football club. Like I said, you know, going back to, was it FIFA 96 or whatever, when Jason McAteer was on the front cover of, I remember Motherwell being a team and that you could select. And I just remember the jersey sticking in my mind. And I thought, oh yeah. So I've always kind of known that about the area, but not much else. And then just kind of getting along to a couple of games at the end of last year. Just kind of really got my kind of appetite going for it, because, you know, I'm not a massive football fan by any stretch of the imagination. Kind of followed it over the years, more the kind of my era would have been USA 94 and stuff like that. But yeah, just went along to a couple of games last year and was just kind of really taken aback with kind of how nice everybody was, first and foremost. Everyone from the kind of guys that look after the social media right down to, you know, the people working on the day in the stadium and stuff like that. I just had a really positive experience with about three or four games at the end of last season, and kind of made the commitment then, you know, coming up for this year. I was like, look, you know, I'm new to the area, you know, might as well make an effort. So I kind of put my money where my mouth was and signed up for a season ticket. But yeah, here we are, two games into that season so far, and definitely been interesting.
Yeah, let's hope that side of it gets better. Certainly, there's a real community feel to the club. We focus on that in the podcast. A lot of things out with the 90 minutes on the pitch are very important, but it's fantastic to hear that you've had a really friendly welcome and you feel part of it. It's quite amazing how, even in the space of a year, you can take something to your heart as much as you seem to have done with Motherwell.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And even like things that you just, I don't think you get with other clubs because you don't have the fan ownership model. I mean, a couple of weeks back there, I went along to the AGM for the Wells Society, which I kind of joined because I thought this is a really cool initiative. And, you know, I don't know really any other kind of professional clubs that have that kind of accessibility for their fans, and actually getting to sit, you know, with the board, and Alan Burrows was there as well, and actually fielding questions kind of that you wouldn't get with any other football club. I doubt you'd rock up to Ibrox and be able to sit in and have a chat with the, you know, the kind of powers that be. So stuff like that, just the kind of access and the friendliness of the club. And yeah, I think it really speaks volumes to me. And as I said, I'm by no means a massive football expert or anything like that, but just I feel like I've been kind of very welcome since I started coming along. And the jerseys thing kind of spun off from that. Like, I've always been a big fan of collecting stuff. You know, I come from a family, like my dad collects records from the 60s and 70s and has done that all his life. So I've kind of grown up around that kind of stuff. And I've always kind of dipped in and out of things myself, whether it's kind of sneakers or comic books or whatever over the years, but kind of vintage sportswear is something that I'm really big in the middle of nowhere in Ireland, like seeing stuff like, you know, the NBA jerseys or the ice hockey jerseys, they always seem so exotic to me. So I kind of, anything kind of mid-90s, that kind of time frame, sports-wise, I always kind of gravitate towards. And looking back at Motherwell, like, you know, when they had the pony kits and that during the 90s, like some of them are absolute belters. So being able to track that down and kind of align it with kind of following the club, it's been a cool little experiment to be working on. And I reached out to Grant, the team at the commercial team at Motherwell a couple of weeks back, and I said, look, just to let you know, I'm kind of new to the area, I'm working on this little project. I know that the club is really good at doing kind of interviews and stuff from the fans' perspective, as opposed to always just pushing the club's kind of agenda. So I said, look, if you're ever looking for a kind of fans' voice or kind of new fans, whatever, I'd be more than willing to kind of volunteer my services. So that came about kind of really naturally, and Grant and the team kind of came around to the house one of the days and just kind of filmed me talking about the jerseys. I kind of hung out all the stuff that I had and kind of brought them through some of the bits I picked up and some of my favorite pieces. And yeah, it just like it came together really nicely. And I was kind of, I didn't want to come across as one of these like crazy fans, like, you know, decked out head to toe in Motherwell gear, but I think they managed to make it look all right.
Yeah, it's a great video. And it's nice to kind of go on a trip down memory lane as well with many of the old shirts. Some of them I'm sure you got messages for afterwards, because there's quite a few sought after items.
Oh, then. Absolutely. Yeah. The 1991 Admiral shirt with the Ian Skelly sponsorship. I've tracked one down myself. I had to get it all the way from, I think it was like Virginia or somewhere in America. I got it off eBay. But that's the one every other day I'm getting messages about that jersey. It seems to be fans of all ages, whether they were kind of a football watching age in 1991 or not. That seems to be the big one that everyone's looking out for.
Yeah, and that obviously will maybe be put into the memory bank when we go on to win another cup, but that certainly
absolutely
won't be this year's Betfred Cup after Friday night. That was a really seamless link there, wasn't it? Quite impressive.
It was effortless segue, effortless.
It was a game where we were second best for long spells, 2-0 down at half time, and that was despite Hearts missing a penalty early on as well. It really could have been more. Chris Long gets his one back with an hour in the clock. But I suppose, Sean, looking back on it, Hearts will rarely have a more comfortable win at Fir Park. A comfortable night for them and a very disappointing night from a Motherwell point of view.
I think you summed it up perfectly there. I think 2-1 probably flattered us a little bit when it comes to the scoreline, because there was a couple opportunities there where I was sure that Hearts were going to get 3 or 4. You know, okay, fair enough. I have to add the disclaimer. I didn't watch the game live. I was actually standing in a field in Ballyhooston watching The Cure on Friday when the game was on, but I taped it on BT Sports and watched it when I came home, and it wasn't an easy watch when you're still up at 2 o'clock in the morning looking at the screen going, Jesus. There wasn't a lot of positives to take away from it, let's put it that way.
No, it certainly wasn't, and I would have much preferred The Cure and The Twilight Sad myself. There was a point where the rain was coming down that much, we were kind of performing rain dances in the sand, hoping we'd be up. It was just one of those nights. From the off, I think I tweeted about 20 minutes in, we're just not at the races here. It just didn't feel like we ever got a foothold in the game.
It started so erratic and just chaotic. If you compare the first, we'll say 15, 20 minutes of the Celtic game, okay, fair enough, we lost that 5-2, but how Motherwell came out kind of all guns blazing, really attacking, and compare that with the first 15, 20 minutes of the Hearts game where it was just all over the place. And, you know, I don't know how, you know, it's not like we saved that penalty, it just didn't go in. So you can't really take much from that. And it was just, Jesus, it was all over the place. And I don't think they ever really settled into it. And yeah, it didn't make for the best viewing on TV. I can only imagine standing in the stands in the piss and rain. It probably wasn't the best either.
No, it was incredibly disappointing. And after the match, Stephen Robinson, clearly disappointed as well. He was quite harsh in some of the new guys.
Mm.
Kind of urged them to get up to speed. He's mentioned the fitness levels post-match against Celtic. Stephen Robinson clearly not happy at the levels these new players have come in at. Now, he has also bemoaned the budget and what he's got to play with there, saying that that's the quality of player we can get.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can coach guys, but are these guys going to get up to the level? We're very excited about Jermaine Hilton and Sherwin Seedorf, but since the proper stuff has started, these guys have really struggled. It's,
yeah, one of the things that kind of stood out for me, especially with the kind of the Celtic game as well, is just the kind of physicality of those guys that you mentioned, like Hilton, Seedorf, even Illich and stuff like that as well. Like, okay, new lads are coming in and they've got a bit of pace, and it's kind of exciting to watch when you're kind of thrashing teams from the leagues below. But I worry a little bit that they're just going to kind of get bullied a bit against some of the kind of the other teams in the league. And it kind of seemed against Celtic and Hearts, they just weren't really making much of an impact. And it's all well and good having kind of speed on your side, but if you haven't got a bit of physicality to match it, then I worry a little bit. And I know, okay, fair enough, we're two games in and we'll probably, you know, need these new players to kind of settle down a wee bit and kind of find their role in the team. And it probably doesn't help that, you know, of all the games that I've watched preseason and to now, you know, we're kind of chopping and changing. It doesn't seem like the management has kind of found a starting 11 that they're happy with. You know, it still doesn't feel like there's a natural, especially up front, that we have this kind of natural selection of players. It just seems like we're chopping and changing and hoping for the best. And so far, we haven't found it.
Yeah, that's a concern for me in terms of, we brought in a lot of players last summer. They took a while to bed in. Mm-hmm. And it was only really the emergence of the young players like David Turnbull and Jake Hasty.
Mm-hmm.
They revitalised their season. It gave us a spring and a step and possibly led us to survival, because kind of come Christmas time last year, it was looking very, very worrying.
Yeah.
Now, we've had to make wholesale changes again. There was a real sense of optimism when we started with the Betfred games. You are playing lesser opposition, but the performances were good. We were scoring goals. We weren't conceding at the other end. Mm-hmm. It's quite incredible how quickly the preseason optimism could be totally eradicated. And I think these two defeats have went some way to doing so.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to them, to go from playing like Greenock to playing Celtic, do you know what I mean? That's a huge leap. And I think one of the last home games I was at before the Celtic one was at Annan, where we won like 4-0, and it was just kind of knocking them in left, right and centre. And then to go from that to Celtic, it is a complete change of pace. And kind of fixture-wise, probably isn't the easiest that in the first month alone we have Celtic, Hearts and Hibs, you know what I mean? And it's almost now putting the pressure on this Saturday with the Hamilton game that it's like a must win, which is a horrible situation to be in, because it's almost like, I kind of felt for Hearts the situation they were coming into in the game on Friday. It's like they had a terrible preseason and not a great start to their season. So they were in the position we're in now, which is almost like a must win scenario just to kind of get the fans back on side. And I think that's put a lot of pressure on Motherwell ahead of the Hamilton game on Saturday.
Yeah, I say that a lot, that at the start of the season, you don't want to be scrambling about looking for that first win.
Yeah.
I suppose looking at it from a more balanced perspective, Livingston away on the artificial surface, a difficult place to go. We mm-hmm. went there and got a point. We're expected to lose to Celtic. So perhaps we're not a million miles away from where you would expect us to be at this stage. But there's a real importance in that Hamilton game. And we'll go on to that in just a wee bit. But I want to look back at the Celtic game first, and we made a fantastic start to that game.
Yep. I think, I mean,
1-0 up.
Yeah, I think
went behind at half time though.
Yeah, I think going 1-0 up was within the first 12 minutes was amazing. And just that eruption around Fir Park was something special. And okay, fair enough, I'm new to the club, so I can't pretend I've got a load of good memories to draw back on. But definitely, you know, for me so far, that was just incredible. Like, okay, fair enough. Then you had the boy from Celtic marched up the pitch like RoboCop straight afterwards and just blasted one in the net to draw a level. But, you know, for those first 12 minutes, it was brilliant. But they were unfortunate to go down 2-1 by halftime. And then just the second half, I think the less we say about that, the better.
One of the positives, though, two goals for Liam Donnelly, who's become a bit of a goal-scoring machine.
Yeah.
I don't think is it by any way the finished article, Liam Donnelly, but he took his first goal fantastically well. He was in the right place at the right time for the second goal. His goal-scoring record is certainly grabbing him some attention, that's for sure.
Definitely, but I think players like himself and Declan Gallagher are standing out to me. Again, I'm not kind of trying to, you know, throw back to this kind of old style of football where you need kind of hard men or whatever, but they have that kind of physicality that I think Motherwell are definitely going to need to compete at that top level. And you know, just to compare it to your Seedorfs and your Hiltons, like for me so far, they're not displaying that. And I think, the more we see players like, you know, Declan Gallagher and stuff like that and getting forward, I think, you know, that'll stand us in good stead, hopefully.
Yeah, looking at the negatives, I've got quite a big list here, but I'd say all five goals were preventable. Even the fourth goal, there's a clear handball in the build-up, but they're only 30 yards from their own goal. They've still got to go all the way up the other end of the park and score.
Yeah, I know. A lot of fans after that fourth goal were just kind of, you know, obsessing about the referee and stuff like that. It's like, look, at the end of the day, they scored four other goals against us. You can't be, you know, the referee wasn't putting them in the back of the net. You know what I mean? As much as you can have decisions go against you, I think people were kind of maybe focusing on the wrong thing a wee bit. So, yeah, I don't know. That fourth goal, where I sit in the stand, I could clearly see it hit his hand and off he went, but, you know, you'll get that.
Yeah, it's... It's slightly ironic given our somewhat moronic 1991 captain's quotes following their cup tie on Saturday, Celtic not getting any decisions. But without going into that in too much detail, it's very hard to blame a referee. I completely agree when you've lost the game 5-2. And,
exactly.
And bear in mind, we scored our second goal with the last kick of the ball. So. Mm-hmm. It was 5-1 for 93 minutes or so. So, yeah, a disappointing day against a side that will beat teams 4 and 5 over the course of the season. That's what Celtic do. That's why they've won 8 titles in a row. I don't think we can take too much from that game. We're not expected to get anything. We got nothing. Yeah. My concern is more with the Hearts game and the performance there. I thought there was enough positives in the Celtic game that would kind of take us into the cup tie with a slight degree of confidence.
No, absolutely. Even if they could just, like I said, focus on the first kind of 12, 15 minutes of that game and kind of try and even recapture that. But like I said, they just came out from the first blow of the whistle on Friday against Hearts. They just came out and it was just erratic. You know what I mean? They just seemed like no one knew what position they were in or anything. And I totally get that. It's different when you watch it on TV as opposed to when you're in the stands. But just watching it on BT, and it was like, what are these lads doing? And then you've got people like Charles Dunn reverting to just hoofing the ball up the pitch. And it's like, ugh. You just wonder what the learnings were from the Celtic game and how they couldn't have been applied on Friday.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. It was every bit as bad watching in the stands, I can assure you. But I think you maybe get a more rounded view when you watch the game back in the television. I've not been brave enough to do so. And to be honest, I don't think I ever will.
you miss nothing.
There was a few issues around the Celtic game, kind of out with the football. There was meant to be, following consultation with the Welsh Society, no away fans in the Cooper Bar. Mm-hmm. That seemed to happen. I wasn't there myself, I must confess, but there was reports of Celtic fans being allowed in. There was a sign outside the door that said away fans welcome. Huh. For me, I was very annoyed when it happened at the Rangers game towards the back end of last season. The reason for that was there was Motherwell fans not being allowed in when the place was full with Rangers fans. We need to look into that. I'm sure Suzanne Reid, who's coming on the podcast soon, will be able to clarify why that situation happened.
Is there some weird thing where if they sell like hospitality tickets to away fans and they're kind of obliged to let them in the bar or something like that? You'd think, like you said, it'd be fairly straightforward, just kind of be like, no away fans, and that's that. But is there some weird thing? Because there was kind of people giving out as well that there was Celtic fans sitting in the Phil O'Donnell stand. But again, I think that might be, is that tied in with the same thing? If you get like a hospitality package, do you kind of get access to the bar? I don't know.
It would be the case if it was a Centenary bar, but the Cooper bar tends to or it was meant to be home fans only for this game.
Strange.
The sign suggested otherwise. There's talking social media of fans going elsewhere. It's a bit of an own goal from the club because you're obviously losing footfall through the supporters' bar. The Celtic fans certainly wouldn't be there.
I will say this much still, just in relation to Celtic fans, and I know I'm probably sound incredibly biased with the accent that I have, but I cycle to the games. And when I was coming back, I decided to cut through by the police station and go down, is it Orbiston Street, the one that kind of runs parallel behind for a park? Yep. And I literally pulled my bike out in front of all the boys getting on the buses, hanging around, drinking their Buckfast. And I was like, oh, fuck. But no one said nothing. And I'm not right. Fair enough. Like, they pumped us 5-2, so they didn't need to be kind of aggro. But I got absolutely no hassle going up the road. And like, I was there in my 1994 Motherwell home jersey. So I was as easy a target as anything. But no, you know, everybody was fine. There was no messing or no kind of aggro or anything like that, which is a bit of a contrast to some of the stories I've been hearing after the Hearts game. So, you know, as much stick as the kind of Old Firm fans get, I suppose I should probably share a positive story as well.
Yeah, fair play. The stories after the Hearts game, I'm not going to go into that stuff. I believe it's kind of, it's been reported in the media. There's various twists on this story, but possibly not for the podcast to comment on that kind of issue. But the Cooper Bar, in that sense, in terms of if Motherwell fans weren't filling it, I would understand looking to away fans to increase the footfall and the takings behind the bar. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a bit of a struggle to police that. The home sections, you were talking about the Philadelphia stand, there was a section of quite obvious Celtic fans in front of us. The club are very good at taking details when people are buying tickets, so you can only assume that it's Motherwell fans that are buying on behalf of friends and family, so that's quite disappointing.
Yeah.
Obviously, they have had their...
Because, like you said, technically it shouldn't happen. Because I actually know, this is funny enough, the very first game I went to last year, we saw Celtic at home to at Fir Park. It was back in December last year, the one that was 1-1. And I just remember trying to buy tickets for that because I hadn't, the only thing other game I'd been to was a Colts game against Sligo Rovers. And I remember going online and just thought, oh, fine, it's Ticketmaster, I'll just buy two tickets and be fine. I remember having to jump through such hoops and like ringing the club. And I'm like, look, I am Irish, but I'm not a Celtic fan. I actually live in Motherwell, and I'm trying to buy tickets. And the whole thing was, quite hard going. But it was only then I really kind of understood how kind of, you know, seriously the club takes this kind of stuff and tries to kind of keep, you know, kind of away fans from buying tickets in the other stands. And, you know, when you look around most games at Fir Park and they're not particularly full, you know, the temptation must be there for them to just kind of make the commercial decision and sell the place out if they could. Because you could argue your Rangers and your Celtics, and even the support that the likes of Hearts and Hibs will bring, you know, they could fill easily another stand if they wanted to, if the club felt, you know, that they could just kind of chase the money. But it's, you know, it's a big decision made, and I know it was made in part with, you know, advising or speaking with the Well Society. So it is quite a big decision, and no doubt not an easy one to police.
Yeah, it's certainly not. In terms of, I don't really get the, you're an away fan, why would you want to?
Why would you want to? I know. It's so weird, isn't it?
The game's on the telly. It's not as if it's a league decider or anything like that. It must be awkward. You're going to hear a lot of things said about your team and your players that you're not going to agree with.
You just feel weirdly on edge, I would think. Yeah, I don't know. Me personally, like, I can't imagine sitting in amongst any of the other teams in the league and sitting in amongst their fans with a Motherwell jersey on being like, oh, this is perfectly normal. You know what I mean? But whatever, I guess people just want to see the game any which way they can.
Yeah, I can understand that if it's not a televised game. I do get that there's no substitute for watching a game live, but
true.
It's a bit strange. Anyway, we'll move on to Saturday, and we've already talked about the increased importance of the Hamilton game. Mm-hmm. On Saturday. John, could this be a turning point of our season? We win, suddenly we've got 4 points from our first three games. Things are looking up. You're looking up the table. You lose, and suddenly the season looks like it's going to be very long.
Yeah, no, I think if we win on Saturday, all the top six chat starts up again that was kind of so prevalent by preseason, and then we got Hibs away. Oh, no, we got Hibs at home then at the end of the month, and that'll be a tough one. So I think if we can win on Saturday, at least we'll have a couple of days where that hope is kind of recaptured that we seem to have in the kind of early preseason. But yeah, I think it's just unfortunate, isn't it? They've put themselves in this position now where it almost is a must win. And like, yeah, okay, Hamilton, they're no great shakes, but, you know, the pressure that we have on us, and just the kind of, you know, the derby aspect to it as well. It's not going to be an easy game by any stretch of the imagination. And it's, I hope they get the win. But, you know, you can only hope, as the man says.
Yeah, it's the hope that quite often kills us, to be perfectly honest. In terms of selection, Jake Carroll will be back and available. Yep. Very much hope he returns to left back, allowing Richard Tate to move to right back.
Uh-huh.
The striking situation, Chris Long comes on and scores on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
James Scott hooked early on. He was hooked at half time.
Mm-hmm.
None of our strikers, Devante Cole, has been kind of deployed as a wide man more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
He's yet to get his first goal for the club. who do we go for there? I would love to see us get someone else in before the window. I think we badly need someone else in before the window.
But the real worry is we don't have a natural. The real worry is that we don't have a natural striker. And okay, fair enough. James Scott, like, he's a young lad. You know, he's kind of learning his trade. Fair enough. Long looked okay when he came on against Hearts. Devante Cole, I've not seen enough of to kind of think one way or another about him. But it actually reminds me of watching when I'm watching the Republic of Ireland soccer team as well. It's like, who actually scores the goals here? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, you get decent defense, decent midfield, but then when it comes to strikers, it's like, who's actually knocking them in? Because at the moment, I don't think there's anyone jumping off the page. And I think every game I've watched so far, I don't think any of the strikers have played a full game to really get, or maybe they have, but like to get that kind of full impact. I don't think I'd be like, all right, that's definitely my first choice. Like, just on goals scored, you probably have to go with James Scott. But I don't know. It's tough. I mean, I'm taking a lot out of the fact that Jake Carroll is back. I was really impressed with him in the preseason games and some of the early Betfred Cup games. I think he looked particularly good, and he was getting, you know, he had great pace, and he was kind of getting up the field and stuff like that. And I'd hope he can kind of bring an extra dimension on Saturday now that he's back. But if you're asking me who's going to knock in goals for us, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, and as I've said, none of the forward players have managed to really perform in the early stages of the league campaign. And then I suppose Chris Long comes on and gets his first goal on Friday night. That will be a big confidence boost for him, but I still don't think he's going to be that 15 goal a season player we're crying out for. David Turnbull got it from the midfield last year, but you can't rely on an almost miracle happening every season. So need an actual goal scorer. The manager's bemoaned his budget. You're not going to be able to find a free scoring player that's well known and he's going to want to come to Motherwell. But it's
you got to feel though that the likes of your Jermaine Hiltons and your Seedorfs, if they get a bit of confidence under them, do you know what I mean? There was one or two shots that they've had. I think Jermaine Hilton had one there against Hearts on Friday, and it just looked like he passed it to the goalkeeper, and it's like, that's not what you're looking for at this level. But I think if lads like that, once they get their confidence under them, they get one or two in, you'd hope that kind of, you know, spurs them on a little bit, because it just doesn't look like we've got much goal scoring options at the moment, which is a bit worrying.
Yeah, and I guess they're certainly, given the lack of experience at the top level, both these guys, they need to be treated with a bit of patience, I think.
Mm-hmm.
If the fans start turning early doors, it could be a real game changer. It could be a real ruiner in terms of their time at Motherwell if they've got the fans on their back. Wingers, by their nature, are going to be frustrating. I think a wee bit of patience is required, and that's not by any means saying that either player has hit the ground running since the Livingston game. Both of them have underperformed, but you've got to take into context that they're just new to Scottish football.
Yeah.
They're learning the ropes. They are raw.
I mean, there's definitely positives to take from it. I mean, the pace that they've injected into the team, it's you know, it's kind of night and day almost from kind of last season. And it's almost kind of just refining that now and hopefully get the kind of finished product sooner rather than later.
Yeah, they do need to do it quick. And I'm sure the coaching team will be really, really working in these guys individually, trying to get the very best out of them. Mm-hmm. There was wee points where I watched Hilton and his lack of willingness to track back and things like that. That'll need to get drilled into him very quickly, because if it doesn't, then he'll not play. It'll be as simple as that. We need to have a guy that will do the attacking work, but he also has to pull his weight defensively as well. So a lot of work ahead for these guys.
I mean, there's a couple other positives as well. I mean, you've got the boy that scored the bicycle kick on trial. Manzinga, is that his name? He's yet to make an appearance because he's injured at the moment. And, you know, you'd be hoping, again, he'll kind of up our goal-scoring chances a wee bit, but I suppose I haven't seen the finished product yet.
The other one, I know he's not a striker, but Casper Casper by name and also nature. Casper,
where has that boy been? He was like the first signed and announced late last season, wasn't he? Or in the summer. And I was like, oh, cool, this guy, he played for Denmark and all this stuff. And I have seen or heard nothing about him since he's come over.
Yep, absolutely bizarre. He's been in the stand. There was reports of him going back home because of personal reasons.
Right.
But he's not featured in the 18. I saw him at the Celtic game, but he was at the Celtic game as a punter. He didn't seem to
The case.
It doesn't seem to be in the picture. I don't know whether he's got an injury. It's not really been discussed.
Yeah.
We always seem to have a summer signing that just doesn't feature. Like Liam Donnelly was pretty much the same last season. He just never really got an opportunity early on, and then they just disappear. I hope, given the pedigree that Kasper Sloth has got, you would think that it would be a big addition to our squad. So
yeah,
definitely. A strange one there, and I guess the truth will come out as to what the situation is there. The other thing I want to talk about, Aki's away, is £25 adult entry, and even worse, £15 for kids, which is just absolutely ridiculous. Scottish football is in real danger of pricing supporters out of attending matches.
Yep.
Hamilton, a club that are watched by two men and a dog in most weeks, we'll take more fans to Aki's on Saturday.
Which is depressing. I mean, as much as we can kind of big up, you know, it's brilliant that we get the away support, but just for Scottish football in general, I mean, it was the same at Livingston as well, wasn't it? We brought more than there was like 2,500 Motherwell fans, and was there even 2,000 Livingston fans?
Yeah, I think it was less. I think our away support at Livingston was about 1,500. And again, at £25 on the back of season tickets,
being
into cup matches, it's a fantastic support, but in terms of sensible pricing, it's just not there. The prices for kids as well are just utterly ridiculous.
Aye, that £15 per kid is mad. That's mad.
People are seriously questioning whether to go and support their team, whether they can afford to go and support their team.
Which is sad because it's technically the local derby, right? It's the closest stadium to Motherwell, probably. Am I right in saying that? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then, because they jack up the prices, everybody kind of loses their head a wee bit, but it's a hard sell, do you know what I mean? It's like, I feel for clubs, and Motherwell are no different, do you know what I mean? How do you entice people to go to the football? Do you know what I mean? Like, okay, fair enough. Like, I've kind of invested in the club myself, and I've kind of made a real effort to go along. But, like, you know, I'm living in an estate, you know, with, Jesus, hundreds of other houses of people more or less the same age. And if they haven't already moved out supporting Celtic or Rangers, like, how do you convince people to come along to the local games? Do you know what I mean? It's tough for any of these clubs, and I think especially the Livingstons and the Hamiltons of this world must feel it more than anybody else.
But is that an excuse to price
top the price?
Out?
I know that's it, isn't it? That's the kind of the killer, isn't it? It's like, well, how are they going to make any money? And I suppose the only way they can is by scalping the people they know that are going to go regardless, which is a sad state of affairs. But I wish there was a simple kind of answer to how do you kind of get fans to go along to local games, but I honestly have no idea. You know, the overheads are running clubs and, you know, everything from your electricity and heating upwards, do you know what I mean? It must be phenomenal just to kind of get your head around the day-to-day running of a club, and that's before you factor in, you know, paying your staff, your players and all of that, and then having to up your prices and people are be like, nah, you're grand, thanks. You know what I mean? Like, I can guarantee you the Hamilton set up on Saturday, it's not going to be sold out by any stretch of the imagination, you know, whether they put the tickets up or not. So I don't know, it's a tough one. I kind of feel, because Motherwell aren't in, you know, that dissimilar situation themselves, is there's often you look around for a park on a game that isn't, you know, Celtic or Rangers or one of the bigger clubs, and place is half empty, do you know what I mean, on a good day. So how do you entice people to come down to the games? It's tough.
Yeah, I completely agree. Speaking as someone that goes home and away, the thought of having to miss games was difficult, but this season I'm going to have to. The prices to go are just ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. I can see it's £27 for Hearts away in early September. Taking the wee one along, it's just not possible. I'll make a late decision in Hamilton. Obviously, we'll still take a big support because people... Mm-hmm. love going to the football. They want to go along and support their club, but these prices are stopping them from doing so. So
that is something
has to be done. Something has to be kind of considered here.
Mm-hmm.
We often talk about the game getting compared to the English Premier League and battling up against other things. You can take yourself along to the View Cinema now for $4.99 and mm-hmm. watch the latest film that's out.
Mm-hmm.
There's other alternatives that are now considerably cheaper than football.
Yeah.
And it's something that football needs to address before the situation is that we are going along to top flight games with absolutely embarrassing crowds. And it'll all be due to the fact that they've priced out your diehard fans, they've priced out your working class people. Yeah. It's a very dangerous game they're playing.
Well, like you said, people will vote with their wallets, you know what I mean? As much as they'll give out online or piss and moan, like the fact is they're not going to buy tickets and they're not going to go. So, like you said, the sooner kind of clubs address that, the better. And I think Motherwell has been brilliant with some of the initiatives they've done. Like, I think the last game of the season I went to, the Livingston one at home, where they kind of gave the stand away to the kind of local school kids and got them coming along. They gave them free tickets and something like that. Like, I'm not saying you have to do that every weekend, but something like that, like, get kids in, you know what I mean? If they're buying a can of Coke and a bag of crisps, or do you know what I mean? If they're putting some money back into the club, or they get a taste for it, they want to come back with their mom and dad or whatever, happy days. You know what I mean? I think that's the way you address it. It's kind of get them in young and you know, get them kind of on board with what the club is about and what a fun day out it can be, and kind of build from there, rather than just being like, oh yeah, you're a kid, 15 quid, thanks. You know what I mean? Because you're not going to get any new fans that way.
Yeah, it's possibly a dangerous term to use, but it's almost a form of brainwashing. You've got to get them in.
But look, I mean, I follow like the baseball and stuff like that, and you know, you often see games on TV and the stadiums are half empty, but if you look at any you know, Major League Baseball team, every night that they've got a game on, there'll be some incentive. It'll be like free bobbleheads, or you know, you get free entry if you're like a nurse or a firefighter, whatever it is. There's always some kind of gimmicky incentive to get people in the door. And I'm not saying kind of Scottish football can adopt that wholesale, but that's clearly a sport where they've looked at the dwindling numbers, and rather than try and kind of gouge their fans for more money, they're like, well, what can we do to make people want to come and see us? And they're kind of actively doing something about it. And okay, fair enough, it's kind of the American way of doing things. But there's learnings there. And like I said, I think Motherwell have taken some steps, especially with kind of getting kids in the door, you know, that have been really kind of positive. And you'd hope that kind of for generations to come, that is kind of planting the seed a wee bit with getting kind of kids, you know, on board with supporting their local club.
Yeah, I can see that it's £3 for under 16s for our game at home to Hibs.
Mm-hmm.
That's for home and away fans, which is
brilliant.
Excellent. And,
yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I believe that our admission prices were £30 for away fans for the Celtic game.
Yep, yeah.
For me, that's too much as well. So there's elements of it that we also need to address as a football club, but
mm-hmm.
I think this is a key one in terms of the next generation. Let's not price them out.
Exactly.
£3 is excellent. There's a family deal as well for a parent and two children. It just kind of eradicates that situation where you're thinking, well, £25 is a lot, but also I need to pay £15 for my 3-year-old. Things like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. Let's actually think about this a wee bit more. Looking at the Hibs game, it's a game, Sean, that I would say a lot of the build-up to that game will be dictated by what happens on Saturday.
Yeah.
We'll look back on the game on our next podcast. Hibs, a bit of a mixed bag to start the season with. Lots mm-hmm. of goals mm-hmm. in the games that they've been involved in so far.
Mm-hmm.
Always a very tricky game at Fir Park. It'll be another difficult one, but at home, we've got to start kind of stamping our authority.
Definitely.
Picking up 3 points at home. Tough challenge, but one we can win.
Yeah. I think, like you said, it'll be very much dependent on the outcome of the Hamilton game, what momentum they go into the Hibs one with, because it's going to be pure... If we draw or lose against Hamilton, it's going to be pure desperado mode at the end of the month against Hibs, and that's kind of the worst way to be, because, you know, on their day, I would just... You know, if you gave me the option of Hearts at home or Hibs at home, I would have thought, you know, Hearts we would have definitely done better against. So I just think, again, talking about piling pressure on themselves, you just hope that we're not looking at the end of the month at Hibs as a must-win situation, because that's going to be fairly desperate.
Yeah, fingers crossed it doesn't come to that. We'll just wrap up this week's podcast by talking over a few things going on with the podcast itself. The sponsorship draw, we're still accepting entries for that. Jermaine Hilton and Sherwin Seedorf's away strips we'll be sponsoring this season. It has been a bit difficult to promote in the back of a couple of defeats, but if you can get involved, please do. One of our sponsorships for Jermaine, that will be going to Scott McClure's Project Zambia. He's going over to Zambia next year and donating a shed load of football memorabilia, football kits, boots, strips. He's already got a 50-foot storage unit, which is absolutely brimmed amazing with fantastic donations.
I think I saw this on Twitter. He's got like the full set of like the Hummel kits from like the early 90s in kid sizes. I think this is the same guy. He posted a picture.
Yes, it
is. Yeah, so there's going to be kids over in Africa running around in the Hummel kits, which is amazing.
Yeah, he's got a fantastic amount of donations. He's having an eight at Fir Park towards the end of the month. Honestly, so much enthusiasm from Scott regarding this project. I've managed to sit down with him earlier on. I think he's brimming with ideas. He's very excited about it. It's just an idea that he had that has grown and grown and really is doing fantastic work there. We're delighted to be working in partnership with him. So, as I say, we're looking for, if anyone can get involved in the sponsorship draw, please do. It's our way of supporting the club through the season and also getting to support Scott at the same time is a real honour. So there'll be plenty of shirts there, Sean, that will possibly take
I must actually reach out to him because like part of what I'm doing as well as kind of my own collection, I'm kind of just building up Motherwell shirts in general. So people are looking for stuff or, you know, if there's a good cause that I can go towards, definitely want to get involved there as well.
Yeah, and I'll continue to share Scott's posts on Twitter. As I say, some of the prizes for his night at the end of the month are just absolutely brilliant. I really wish him all the best, and we're going to have Scott on soon as well to talk about this a bit more. But finally, Sean, I would really like to thank you for coming on tonight. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you, to hear your journey kind of into supporting Motherwell. Your enthusiasm's pretty infectious at this early stage.
Oh, that's good. Hopefully, I was worried I might sound a bit too cynical two games in, but no, I'm staying confident.
Yeah, well, let's hope that the next time you come on, we're talking about our push for European football.
Exactly.
or even just on the back of a win, that would be nice. But
I'll take that at this early stage. I'll take that.
Yeah, I think it is important to kind of stress that we are at an early junction of the season.
Absolutely.
Things aren't looking that rosy in the garden at the moment, but it can turn around. There's still a couple of weeks to get new faces in. There's still a couple of weeks for new faces to develop and get up to speed. So it's not all doom and gloom, just like it wasn't all brilliant when we were winning against Annan and Morton and Dumbarton. You've got to kind of keep it in perspective. Early doors, and let's hope we can push on by stuffing Ackies on Saturday.
Exactly.
You've been listening to the MSC podcast. We'll be back following the Hibs game. Until then, thank you and goodbye. Did nothing.